If you want to turn to the book of James, James chapter 5, I'll move that down a little bit. Is that better? Not quite so loud now. James chapter 5. We studied last time about the warning to the rich at the beginning of the chapter. Tonight we want to look at verses 7 through 12, where James talks about patience. Patience in all circumstances. Patience is probably one of the things that more people need to work on than any other single thing. All of us, from time to time, lose our patience. We lose our temper with folks for one reason or another. James points out to us
today. I think we might, many of us say,
Well, don't rush it too much. We're having a pretty good time here the way it is. Don't be in too big of a hurry to get back here. Sometimes we enjoy this world and the things of this world a little too much. And we don't look forward to His coming. The writers tell us again and again throughout the Bible that we are to be watching, praying, looking for His return. Sometimes I'm afraid that we don't do that, but we need to be patiently looking. That's hard when you're looking to be patient. When Xander is looking for Grammy or Papa to come, or knows Nanny's coming over, or he knows any number of things are going to happen, and we're going to go somewhere. It's hard when he's looking forward to some event occurring. It's hard to wait. We went fishing yesterday, and I told him, "Now we're not going to get these fish today. We're going to get them next Saturday." Just a little while ago, he said, "After church, are we having the fish fry today?" It's going to be a long time until Saturday, because he's expectantly waiting for something. And when we want something badly, when we're desiring something, it does seem like it takes a long time for it to get here. And in the same vein, sometimes when we are dreading something, it seems like it comes up just like that. But sometimes, we are not patient enough. Notice what he says in verse 7. "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain." So he gives the farmer waiting for a crop as an example of patience. And I've seen some farmers. There's a lot of work involved in farming. There's also a lot of waiting involved in farming. They got to cultivate the land, and they've got to plow it up, and they've got to sow the seed and all of these things and fertilize it. And then there comes the time, especially in before we had all the sprinkler systems and irrigation and things they have now. And they still do this out in West Texas, where I worked with the church out in Memphis, Texas. They have what they call dry land top farming. They don't irrigate. They don't water. They have to wait for the rain. And if the rain doesn't come, they lose the crop. Waiting on that rain. And there is a long period of time in there after they've planted and they've put down the fertilizer and put down the pesticides to keep the pests away. And then there's a long period of time there where they're off and sitting around in the house a lot of the day, just waiting and watching. Boy, it's hard to be patient during that time. But the farmer patiently waits. You got to have the early rains and the latter rains. You got to allow that crop to fully develop. If he goes out there and pulls it up too soon, he'll lose it. Think about what that would be. You wouldn't have a crop if you pick it too soon. Of course, you wouldn't want to wait too late either. But he says the farmer waits for the crop. And in the same way, we should be willing to wait for Christ's return. And then he does give them some hope. He says, "Be ye also patient. Establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh." He said, it's getting close. The Lord's coming is near. Well, if it was near then, how much closer is it? We should be comforted in the thought, knowing that the Lord is returning in His good time, but it's closer now. Closer by nearly 2,000 years than what it was at that time. And each day that passes draws us one day closer to His return. Even though we don't know when that return is, we know it's drawing near. And especially as we see, Paul has told Timothy that evil men will wax worse and worse. And as we see the societies around us and the worldly people around us getting worse and worse and more evil, we can see that the end is coming near. Nearer and nearer as these things that the Bible talks about continue to happen. And then he says in verse 9, he draws it back then to how they need to behave. Aside from just patiently waiting, he says in verse 9, "Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge stands before the door." So he says, you better be careful You better watch out on how you treat each other, because the one that judges you is going to show up when you least expect it. He's right behind the door. I don't know, your parents, did you ever do that to your kids? Know they were up to something and stand by the door and wait and listen? Hear what they were saying and what they were doing? Sometimes people are surprised by what goes on because they don't realize that the judge is at the door. I think about that sometimes with the police. You know, they'll be watching somebody. Maybe have them in a sting operation of some sort, whether it be a drug dealer or any number of people. And they're just waiting and watching just behind some closed doors, maybe in a vehicle or around the corner. And they're waiting till that person does whatever it is that they're involved in. They're waiting for them to do it. And as soon as they do it, there they go. They go and get them. And they were right there. And you think if that person had known that the police were right over across the street watching, you think they would have gone ahead and done that? Well, they would have waited and tried to slip off and do it somewhere else if they thought they were watching. But we've got to realize Christ is watching. He knows. And he's right by the door. And if we are not living as we should when he comes, we'll be sadly surprised. Sadly surprised. Then we see verses 10 and 11. Not only are we to patiently wait for the Lord's coming, but we are to patiently endure suffering. It's a common theme throughout the New Testament that suffering is going to just be part of a Christian's life. Now that's not what a lot of churches will teach you. A lot of churches will teach you, if you just become a member of our church, all of your troubles will go away. Everything will get better. We'll take care of you. Everything's going to be fine. But that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that with Christianity comes suffering that we're going to have to endure. And the question often is, if I'm not suffering, why am I not suffering? Is it maybe because I'm not causing the devil enough trouble to try to do something about it? And the devil doesn't make us suffer just for the fun of it. He makes us suffer to try to hinder us from being and doing what we ought to be and do. And so, if we're not suffering, we have to ask ourselves that question, what's going on? Because all of those in the scriptures who were doing what they were supposed to be doing had somebody that was causing them pain, causing them trouble. Whether it was Paul with his thorn in the flesh, whether it was Peter being arrested and thrown in jail, whether it was Jesus being crucified, or whether it was the example that James gives us here, of the prophet. It says in verse 10, take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Suffering affliction and of patience. Patience, through their suffering. We think about all of the things that some of those prophets suffered through. How Elijah had to be on the run, hiding out in caves, hiding out in little desert places where there was the birds had to bring him food because there wasn't any food. We think about Jeremiah, who was thrown down and left to die in a miry pit, an old dried up well, and just left there for a long period of time. You know, when you're dropped in a miry pit, there's not a whole lot to do. You can't watch TV. There's nobody to talk to. You don't even have a good book to read. What do you suppose Jeremiah had to do all day, every day down in that cave? Couldn't eat, couldn't drink. And so he suffered, and yet he was patient through that suffering, awaiting the Lord's rescue, and the Lord did send rescue in that particular case. Not always, of course, some of the prophets were killed for the things that they said and they did. But we need to understand that if God expected that of them, it may be possible that we find ourselves in that circumstance where he expects that of us. And if we do experience suffering or some sort of torture or imprisonment or whatever the case may be, we have their example. We've seen that it is possible for average human beings to endure persecution. time. Then we see verse 11. It says, be happy. We need to endure like Job did. It says, behold, we count them happy which endure. And you know what a shame it is to suffer through years, months, even sometimes for some of us, minutes of pain or some sort of suffering and give up before the end. The story is told of the first woman who swam across the English Channel. And I've forgotten her name and I didn't write it down. But she did not make it on her first attempt. The first time that she tried to swim across the English Channel, which was only about 15 miles, okay, only. I couldn't swim a half a mile if I tried. But for a great swimmer, 15 miles is doable. She was going to do it. Well, the day that she was supposed to do it, it was cloudy and foggy. And she swam, and she swam, and she swam. And she got tired. Of course, there was a boat going right along beside her, in case there was trouble. But she swam, and she finally just got to the point where she just couldn't do it anymore. She gave up, and they had to holler at her. She was no further from fear than that back wall from the shore, from where she could have reached it, the ground and walked the shore. But because of the fog, she couldn't see it. She was that close. And if she could have seen it, she could have made it. There's something about being able to have that goal in front of us to see it. Just a little further, I can make it. But sometimes when we don't know how much longer it's going to be, we give up in despair. I'm reminded of some of the Jews who were in the concentration camps in Germany. And one in particular had said that they were going to be free on a certain day. And he kept saying, we're going to get out of here on such and such a day. And it gave the people hope. And all of the people were looking forward to that day because they believed him when he said, we're going to get out on such and such a day. Well, that day came, and that day went. And help didn't come. They weren't free. And that very man who had told the others that they were going to get out on that day, died. He lost his hope. He lost his reason to live. And he died. It was less than a week after he died that the Allied forces came in and freed him. That's what he was. He gave his soul. And if these things and if the prophets that we have examples of in the Bible, if they teach us anything, it's that even when we don't know how much further we have to go, to endure. You see, he says we count those happy who endure. What do we count those who made it 99% of the way and then gave up the last couple of bits, the last mile, or they gave up the last few meters of, what do we count those people? Well, we count those people very miserable, don't we? Because they suffered all of that for nothing. So if you're going to suffer something, at least let there be a reason. Let there be something that good that comes of. So we need to endure. But he said, we count them happy which endure. He has heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. What do you think about Job? He and his wife told him, just curse God and die. What if Job, after all that suffering, what if Job had listened to her and had given up and just cursed God and die? How miserable he would have been. For all he heard it. But he didn't. What if he had listened to those friends who were trying to convince him that he was some wicked person and deserved all of this? And he'd say, you're right, I'm wicked, I deserve it, and I'll just end it all, I'll take my own life. Well, he would have been considered very miserable indeed. He certainly wouldn't have gotten a book in the Bible, would he? But instead, he endured to the end. And at the end, he found that the Lord blessed him with twice as much as he had had before. Fortunately, the Lord didn't bless him with twice as many wives. But, he just, you know, he had more children again. 10 more children, just like he had had before. And he had more wealth, more cattle, and more servants. And all of this had more than he had had before because he endured to the end. He didn't give up. When we think about patience, sometimes we think that means that we never have a sad thought or that we never think badly about the situation we're in. Well, that's certainly not true of Job. Job lamented the suffering that he was going through. He even complained, saying that it was a sad day when he was born. That's how bad things were. He basically came to the place and said, with all this suffering, I wish I'd never been born. but he didn't give up. And we've all had times where things were bad. Maybe not quite as bad as Job was. But we've had bad days, and we've had times where we wish that if anything would end. The only way to end it in such a way that we can be happy is to endure. We have to come through and come out on the other side. We have to endure like Job in order to be happy. And then, verse 12 is a little bit off the topic seemingly, but it doesn't really fit in with anything in the last section either. James says in verse 12, "But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation." In essence, he says, stand by your word. Mean what you say, and say what you mean. Remember, he says, read a little book, a little Dr. Seuss book, I guess it was, and record the hatches of egg. And that elephant sat on some bird's egg through rain and through snow and through all sorts of torments and troubles to hatch that little baby bird out of that egg. And every time somebody would say to him something about, well, Horton, why don't you just get off that egg and leave? You know, the mother's not coming back. And just go on. You know, you don't need to be doing that. And he would say, I said I'd do this, and that's what I'm going to do. I meant what I said, and I said what I meant, and an elephant faithful 100%. And he said it, and he asked that egg. And I think about that sometimes. We need to stick to our word. We need to patiently stick to our word. Too many times we'll say we'll do something, and then circumstances change, and we say, I changed my mind, I'm not going to do that anymore. I know, sometimes somebody might say, well, I'm going to come to church Sunday. And they say, where were you Sunday? Well, I was going to come. I talked to somebody yesterday. I'll see you in the morning. I'm going to be there. I didn't see him this morning, and don't see him tonight either. Where were you? What happened? Nothing of great enough consequence to make it worth violating the words that they said. So there are some times things that happen to us that are beyond our control. We may say, you know, I plan to be at church Sunday, and, you know, there's any number of things can really happen to keep us away. We may become ill. We may have been traveling, and some had car trouble and wound up stuck in another state. There are things like that can happen. But when we say we're going to do something, we need to do everything within our power to see to it that we follow through on it. When we speak, we need to say what we mean and mean what we say. There shouldn't be any doubt about it. Patience. You have patiently endured another sermon. Hopefully, having patiently endured, you're now happy. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps you struggle with patience. We all do from time to time struggle with having that patience. And certainly, many of us say, look at Job or these prophets, and we think, I don't know if I could ever have that kind of patience. But perhaps you have a need to work on your patience. You need to do that. You need to work on being more patient in this situation. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any other reason as well, we ask that you do so as we can and as we think.